Next in the ETBRA report, contact in this book of Wendell Stevens and Ludwig Palmad, we have come to chapter 22, Cosmophilosophy and the Seven Commandments. Just recently in a South American country, one of those with chronic revolutionary changes, a young Spanish priest who had arrived only a few weeks before from Europe was opening his chapel doors high up in the Sierra. Suddenly a horde of wild-looking bandits, all carrying machine guns, pushed the trembling priest aside and waited straight to the altar. They did not want to steal the gold and silver. All they wanted to do was to confess. And a very long time it took, as the young priest did not understand the guerrilla Indians' dialect. Confessions and absolutions, but mostly absolutions, were what they came for. None of them wanted to die in sin. When they finally left, the nervous priest tried to call his bishop by telephone, but the bandits had cut the wires. So the priest took a horse and galloped 15 miles to the next village. With the help of another priest, he was finally able to talk to Monsieur, his bishop. He had given the bandits absolution for their sins without understanding their confessions. These men, he thought, must have had murdered on their conscience. "Do not worry, my son," the bishop answered. "You have done the right thing, because otherwise they would have blown your brains out. Besides, God understands all the languages and dialects on earth." Summing up the lucidity of Monsieur, I could say that God understands not only the languages and dialects on this our planet Earth, but on all planets, wherever they may be and wherever the human beings living on such faraway places. But according to the Tiberian cosmophilosophic religion, God does not only understand the language of the human race, he understands the languages and expressions of animals, insects, even such impossible creatures as bacteria. He also understands the rain of the clouds, the warmth of the sun, the cold of the night. According to this religion of nature, God himself is nature, and nature is God. The Tiberians do not separate God from nature. They do not separate good from bad, praising the Lord only for the good things and unloading the bad things upon the so-called poor old devil, living in underdeveloped parts of the universe or such old-fashioned places as hell. The Tiberians never say, "You should love your neighbors or your enemies," because they feel this to be hypocritical or a case of blind love. In that case, I was told, we could easily go too far and include animals domesticated or wild, and perhaps even turn the other cheek to virus and bacteria. The forces of life, my friend, say, are vigorous, and the counterbalance of God's will, which is the result of the relative respect and values we are able to feel for these forces. Therefore, the five commandments of cosmophilosophy is that we shall not fear good, nor man, nor nature, nor inflict pain on man or nature. The third commandment qualifies this and adds that the rights of others are there to be respected and one must act accordingly. The word respect, the Iberian word aita, also means wariness. Respect the rights of other beings, but watch out your own, and be prepared to defend them. Cosmophilosophy entitles you to enforce your own right to respect. Where does all this lead? It leads to a belief in God nature as the fount of origin of us all. It is a very coarse God nature has traced for all creatures since the beginning of the universe. Humanity is no exception to this rule. But cosmophilosophy also says this, because of the higher evolutionary pattern of humanity, it is entitled not to privileges but to the benefits of its intelligence and understanding of the higher laws of God. These laws, cosmophilosophy teaches, are in advance of our present evolutionary level. Cosmophilosophy is not so much a new religion as an evolutionary state of mind tending to understand the highest laws of God. Let us demonstrate this by referring to a controversial subject and ethical problem such as suicide. The great Roman historian Pliny said, "The best thing God has given man amid all the sufferings of his life is the power to end it when he likes." God has given death as his greatest gift with which the end unbearable pain. I personally know of several people who, having been tortured during the war, in an agony of pain and in fear of more, ask God to release them from their sufferings. Suicide should be a sin is absolutely against the will of God. The seventh philosophic commandment says, "You shall not let others die in pain," and this includes your own right not to die in pain. Iberians look forward to a very old age much more than we can hope for, but when old enough to die, they do so without fear or dismay. They know that no doctors or well-meaning relatives are there to keep them alive artificially. They believe it's a sin to prolong the hopeless suffering of any being, not only human beings. Our friends say that in a perfect pattern of life, old age has to be perfect and free of pain. It is unworthy for man to die in pain, for this is not the will of God nature, who has given us the means to avoid pain. But how are the Iberians able to guarantee the observance of such ethical and moral concepts? As I see, these people, liberated from the handicaps of egoism, have learned to organize the problems of population growth and use the powers of nature to bring food and health into every home on their planet. They have one and the same language on one and the same motherland. Their homeland is their planet and not a separate piece of country. They have one and the same law and order for all, and most important, they have the same universal system of education and social security, and because of their seventh commandment, they do not fear death. Their thousands of years of progressive development have shown them the absolute need for education and culture. Hence their fifth commandment, which is called Atas, and the education commandment, you shall at all times work according to your talents and character, and at all times be kind and cheerful, nor shall you feel superior to others. Because of this commandment, the Tiberians feel their duty to develop their talents to the full and to encourage their children to study according to their individual character and ability. But this encouragement and development is checked through their infallible computers. It is not merely a question of what an individual thinks and feels he should work at create or express. It is also a question of what a sophisticated civilization on such an advanced planet can offer the younger generations. On our planet, we often talk about morality and religion, but what kind of work are we able to offer our young people so that they may understand this morality and religion? Work is the same as food, and it is no use talking to a hungry man about God. We must create the right jobs for the right people in order to get the best out of people, and this we must do without discrimination or contempt. This the Tiberians express in their Sitla law, the second commandment of cosmophilosophy, which says, you shall not be hypocrite to yourself or to others. The fourth commandment of this philosophy, called the Suto law, is a rule which the earthmen of today have a great need to obey. It is that you shall abstain from the excesses. Some earth religions have imposed a prohibition against the eating of certain meats or the imbibing of certain drinks, certain habits of this and that. The cosmophilosophy forbids all and every excess which none of our religions have so far offered as a remedy against sickness and death. I recall that Mr. Satura did not smoke, but readers will remember that he liked the drink. I offered him on the train from Bombay to Madras, and his sister Siti enjoyed her Tom Collins in the skyroom in the Hotel Crillon in Lima, Peru. They like to taste things, but they never exaggerate, and I believe the reason for this moderation is the fact that addiction might follow, and addiction leads to death. But you will notice that the fourth commandment does not say, don't do it. It gives you the right to do it in moderation. Do not do it in excess. Which leads me to my observations about the sexual habits of the Tiberians. I came to the conclusion that their higher evolutionary status has made them much more sensible in their treatment of sex. They believe that sex, if not indulged in excessively, is good for humanity, and we have all the right to know every detail about it. It is part of good nature, they say. It can be healthy and enjoyable experience which is granted to all creatures by God nature himself. Repression and suppression of these feelings and instincts, they believe, can have cancer producing factors. These are not presumptions but biologically proven facts. Discussing this with me, they were sure that many forms of our cancerous civilization are the result of former generations having suppressed their natural feelings. Which brings us back to the first commandment again, you shall not fear God, man, nature, or nor inflict pain on them. This also includes the pain you may inflict on yourself. In other words again, whatever you do, respect the rights of others, do not behave unnaturally. This is logic behind all cosmophilosophical laws. They are all combined in the will of God nature himself. The first commandment does not say that you shall not kill, nor steal, nor do this or that. It just orders you to beware of inflicting pain, physical or mental, on any being, human or animal. If you still have to kill animals, I remember Satura saying, then you have the intelligence to do so without inflicting pain. But you could still kill without inflicting pain. One could do so, I remember telling Satura, and still keep the first commandment. But my friend answered, you cannot take life without sinning against the law of sinver, the third commandment of cosmophilosophy, which says, you shall respect the right of other beings. Isn't it obvious? Why should you want to kill any being, not out or to destroy you? I do not understand. Now, why the Itibirains? I do understand now why the Itibirains are vegetarians. I can see the logic of cosmophilosophy, the moral and ethical logic of naturalistic thinking, which according to the Itibirains is the expression of God nature itself. Religion really helps the depressive. We must look at religion not as a cure for physical, moral and mental ills, but we must do what our friends have done. Look at religion as the natural expression of God nature. God nature does not say to the sick and depressed, go and hide in some dark corner and start praying. God nature definitely says to all its creatures, get well or die. Only if you are willing to face this fact, which is God's own intelligence and reality, shall we get well. God nature therefore does not want us to look at ourselves as being sick and ill, but as human beings still able to make friends with God's own beneficial forces of nature, willing to help us to get on our feet again. This also includes our present stage of general contempt, hatred and worldwide hypocrisy, or preparing for war while talking about peace for all. It is only old-fashioned fear and superstition which keep us from new and fundamental naturalistic reasoning, from making friends with our so-called imaginary enemies, from making friends with ourselves. It was Hattura himself who told me that any religious organization which preaches love and compassion without a clear and natural concept leading to understanding of God nature shall be called a religion of hypocrisy. The value of religion, he explained, entirely depends on the active role it is able to play in civilization's progressive and futuristic pattern. In parenthesis, writes, I have not until today forgotten about that little thrill of suspense when Satura told this to me, as a reminder and a warning against dogmatic stiffness and traditional resignation. End of parenthesis. I am sure Mr. Satura is well aware of the fact that millions of human beings are born into these traditional dogmas and belief. When I told him that, he answered that a new age is dawning on humanity, that all this has happened a million times before on other planets, and that a new social and political structure shall play an important role within 100 years from now. And this happened then around 1969 or in the mid-60s. Further, a great and new feeling of friendship shall emerge from the wreck of older social traditions. It is the young people, he mentioned, who shall destroy this spider web of prejudiced belief. I was very much surprised when Satura told me about a great feeling of friendship which shall come over many nations on our planet because of a unique situation. A unique political situation I have never believed to be possible. He mentioned the United States of America and Russia and said that because both countries had had the historical opportunity to overcome traditional nonsense and had opened up tremendous stretches of new land for millions of new settlers, the whole planet Earth within 100 years from now will benefit from the friendship he predicted between the United States and Russia. And this is, and I must remark that this is interesting to read, because this was written about 20 years before the Iron Curtain fell, which opened up for the talk between those superpowers. But now around 2016, which is today, a new Cold War has begun, which may well lead to some conflict, but it will be without doubt a new education for the humanity and experience, of course. I read further. I hope he is right. It would certainly be a surprise, especially as humanity long enough has had to live under the threat of nuclear war. I also remember asking my friend about his view concerning India and China, and he answered that India needs strict and modern social reform combined with economic development enforced through absolute totalitarian laws. This surprised me very much, he writes in parentheses. I will also read the footnote I just went over. Footnote: Satura sincerely believed that the USSR shall be able by the end of this century to write its history greatest page, not in other lands, but within its heart of its own people. Well, it is interesting to read this now, which is written about before 1970, 45 years or more. Well, I go on. Satura said that it is the only way to close the thousand wounds from an almost dying body. That was India. About China, my friend said that unfortunately the Chinese people, from what Itiberian computers contended, had always lived near a famine level and will suffer an overwhelming natural calamity soon if they do not learn to control their population growth and return to absolute individual freedom. Siti, parentheses, writes, Siti as well as Satura told me on several occasions of the urgency of our religious leaders to understand this need to control our present growth of population. End of parenthesis. A dogmatic form of thinking, they made it clear, is not at all in accordance with the ever-changing natural forces of God nature. I believe in this myself. I think that the race towards universal progress is only starting, and those of our religious organizations which do not want to come along will stay behind, way behind. I also feel that in time to come, cosmophilosophy will make it easier for humanity to reject its present materialistic civilization and lead together with those religious organizations willing to learn. If Saturan's predictions are truly significantly by the middle of the 21st century, with the futuristic pattern of cosmophilosophy, our world will have rid itself from all political and social nonsense. Humanity will have turned to the concept of the universal Lord of the cosmos, God nature. But of one thing my belonged friends have warned me, not to mislead the public, not to start a new religion, not to talk about mysteries, not to allow any changes to be added to the pure form of the seven cosmic laws of God nature, nor not to go about this in fanatical way, nor make a new dogma out of it, not to disturb the present way of thinking unless people themselves feel a feeling of friendship towards cosmophilosophy. Let us simply become friends of cosmophilosophy. Let us give these futuristic ideas a chance without destroying their naturalistic strength. All of us, religious-minded or not, should read the commandments of our friends from time to time. Only then, with our present religious convictions, will the beneficial value to health and mind be ours in time to come. Then, last of this chapter is then those seven commandments of cosmophilosophy. First commandment, Ruzit, phonically written word, which means, you shall not fear God, man, or nature, nor inflict pain on God, man, or nature. Second commandment, Sitla, you shall not be hypocrite to yourself or to others. Third commandment, Sinver, you shall respect the rights of other beings. Fourth commandment, Suto, you shall abstain from all excesses. Fifth commandment, Atas, you shall work according to your talents and character, and at all times be kind and cheerful, nor shall you feel superior to others. Sixth commandment, Urus, you shall undo the sins against others and yourself without delay, and respect the laws of cosmophilosophy. Seventh commandment, Rusit, Finn, you shall not let others die in pain. Footnote of this, the historical background of the Seven Commandments is part of Amat Maina, and it is explained in the second book. With the reformation of the original Amat Maina is concerned, and how the great Itibarian leader Talayan achieved giving his people a clear vision of the God nature laws is also part of the second book. And as I said before, this is Rune comment, I look forward to find the second book of Paulman. Suppose it goes deeper into the philosophy, but it will be very interesting to read, and if I find it, I will in a way make it available. But then I end this chapter 22 and chapter 23, Cosmophilosophy and its Festivals, will be on a separate audio file then.